Chapter 7. November, in pursuance of secret instructions sent by the king over the whole country, the inhabitants of every town and city armed and murdered all the Danes who were their neighbors. Young and old, babies and soldiers, men and women, every Dane was killed. No doubt there were among them many ferocious men who had done the English great wrong, and whose pride and insolence, in swaggering in the houses of the English, and insulting their wives and daughters, had become unbearable. But no doubt there were also among them many peaceful Christian Danes who had married English women, and become like English men. They were all slain, even to Gunhilda, the sister of the King of Denmark, married to an English lord, who was first obliged to see the murder of her husband and her child, and then was killed herself. When the King of the Sea Kings heard of this deed of blood, he swore that he would have a great revenge. He raised an army, and a mightier fleet of ships than ever yet had sailed to England, and in all his army there was not a slave or an old man. But every soldier was a free man, and the son of a free man, and in the prime of life, and sworn to be revenged upon the English nation, for the massacre of that dread 13th of November, when his countrymen and countrywomen, and the little children whom they loved, were killed with fire and sword. And so, the sea kings came to England in many great ships, each bearing the flag of its own commander. Golden eagles, ravens, dragons, dolphins, beasts of prey, threatened England from the prows of those ships, as they came onward through the water, and were reflected in the shining shields that hung upon their sides. The ship that bore the standard of the King of the Sea Kings was carved and painted like a mighty serpent, and the king in his anger prayed that the gods in whom he trusted might all desert him if his serpent did not strike its fangs into England's heart. And indeed it did. For, the great army landing from the great fleet near Exeter went forward, laying England waste, and striking their lances in the earth as they advanced, or throwing them into rivers, in token of their making all the island theirs. In remembrance of the black November night, when the Danes were murdered, wheresoever the invaders came, they made the Saxons prepare, and spread for them great feasts. And when they had eaten those feasts, and had drunk a curse to England with wild rejoicings, they drew their swords, and killed their Saxon entertainers, and marched on. For 6 long years they carried on this war, burning the crops, farmhouses, barns, mills, granaries, killing the laborers in the fields, preventing the seed from being sown in the ground, causing famine and starvation, leaving only heaps of ruin and smoking ashes, where they had found rich towns. To crown this misery, English officers and men deserted, and even the favorites of Ethelred the Unready, becoming traitors, seized many of the English ships, turned pirates against their own country, and aided by a storm, occasioned the loss of nearly the whole English navy. There was but one man of note at this miserable pass, who was true to his country and the feeble king. He was a priest, and a brave one. For 20 days, the Archbishop of Canterbury defended that city against its Danish besiegers. And when a traitor in the town threw the gates open and admitted them, he said, "In chains, I will not buy my life with money that must be extorted from the suffering people. Do with me what you please." Apostrophe again and again, he steadily refused to purchase his release with gold wrung from the poor. At last, the Danes being tired of this, and being assembled at a drunken merrymaking, had him brought into the feasting hall. "Now, Bishop," apostrophe they said, "we want gold." Apostrophe, he looked round on the crowd of angry faces, from the shaggy beards close to him, to the shaggy beards against the walls, where men were mounted on tables, and forms to see him over the heads of others. And he knew that his time was come. "I have no gold," apostrophe he said. "Get it, Bishop." Apostrophe, apostrophe they all thundered. "That, I have often told you I will not," apostrophe said he. They gathered closer round him, threatening, but he stood unmoved. Then, one man struck him, then, another, then a cursing soldier picked up from a heap in a corner of the hall, where fragments had been rudely thrown at dinner, a great ox bone, and cast it at his face, from which the blood came spurting forth. Then, others ran to the same heap, and knocked him down with other bones, and bruised and battered him, until one soldier whom he had baptized, willing, as I hope for the sake of that soldier's soul, to shorten the sufferings of the good man, struck him dead with his battle axe. If Ethelred had the heart to emulate the courage of this noble archbishop, he might have done something yet. But he paid the Danes £48,000, instead, and gained so little by the cowardly act, that Sweyn soon afterwards came over to subdue all England. So broken was the attachment of the English people, by this time, to their incapable king and their forlorn country which could not protect them, that they welcomed Sweyn on all sides, as a deliverer. London faithfully stood out, as long as the king was within its walls. But, when he sneaked away, it also welcomed the Dane. Then, all was over, and the king took refuge abroad with the Duke of Normandy, who had already given shelter to the king's wife, once the flower of that country, and to her children. Still, the English people, in spite of their sad sufferings, could not quite forget the great King Alfred and the Saxon race. When Sweyn died suddenly, in little more than a month, after he had been proclaimed King of England, they generously sent to Ethelred, to say that they would have him for their king again, if he would only govern them better than he had governed them before. Apostrophe the unready, instead of coming himself, sent Edward, one of his sons, to make promises for him. At last, he followed, and the English declared him king. The Danes declared Canute, the son of Sweyn, king. Thus, direful war began again, and lasted for 3 years, when the unready died. And I know of nothing better that he did, in all his reign of 38 years. Was Canute to be king now? Not over the Saxons, they said. They must have Edmund, one of the sons of the unready, who was surnamed Ironside, because of his strength and stature. Edmund and Canute thereupon fell to, and fought 5 battles. Oh, unhappy England, what a fighting ground it was! And then Ironside, who was a big man, proposed to Canute, who was a little man, that they two should fight it out in single combat. If Canute had been the big man, he would probably have said yes, but, being the little man, he decidedly said no. However, he declared that he was willing to divide the kingdom, to take all that lay north of Watling Street, as the old Roman military road from Dover to Chester was called, and to give Ironside all that lay south of it. Most men being weary of so much bloodshed, this was done. But Canute soon became sole king of England, for Ironside died suddenly within 2 months. Some think that he was killed, and killed by Canute's orders. No one knows. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.